Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, the Nichols and May of the Now Generation, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
And we're back, and we're not high anymore, and the station has been de-stenched. They must have Febreze the shit out of it.
It took a week to come down after last week's Apocalypso 2012. Well, glad to see you, Judy, and glad to see you back in fine fettle and not napping or hungry or bumping into walls this week.
Yeah, I got a secondhand high from the Apocalypso show.
Last week was our pot party, pot tasting show, and Grandma here really can't deal.
I don't smoke the weed, and but it doesn't really matter when you're in a small room filled with smoke.
Well, you know, we both worked for High Times, and that's enough to put you off weed forever.
It did.
Those fucking paranoid assholes. Except I'm back. I came
there you
back.
Are. You're back.
Because I'm
weed.
Better than they are.
Not hard.
Yeah. Well, today I'm so happy. This room is so filled with talent. It's really incredible.
It's a smarty party in here today.
Woo! Mike and Judy is smart media.
We have two fantastic guests. I started thinking of this show as a Kindle single show because they both have had pretty good success with Kindle singles. Mike Albo, who is the author of Hornito and Underminer, the best friend who casually destroys your life. His Kindle single, The Junket, was fucking hilarious recounting of how he got fired from the New York Times.
It's awesome, and it's sort of like an internet tragedy of sorts.
Yeah, fucking Gawker.
Very funny. No, fucking Gawker and the fucking New York Times. Fuck them.
Fuck the New York Times. Anyway, our other Kindle single author.
More anti-Semitism here on the Mike and Judy Show.
What?
The fucking New York Times. Fucking Jewish liberal motherfuckers.
We've got Mishka Shubali, who has written 1, 2, 3, 4 Kindle singles. His latest is Bachelor Number 1 about... He is actually not too good-looking for TV because he was picked to be on a reality
show. He's a very good-looking guy.
He's a good-looking guy.
Everybody here is
very good-looking. Guys.
Nine out of 10 short, balding men agree that I'm a good-looking guy.
I'm one of the nine.
Well, they even put his picture on the cover this time. Like, Bachelor Number 1 has Mishka's picture. So if you're single and shopping, you should go buy his single and get a date with him. You can...
I'm glad that you're hawking me on the radio.
Hey, this is Date Girl. She pimps for you. We pimp for our guests.
I write
here.
A dating advice column. It is my goal in life to get everyone laid. His other
53
books are
shows, and I'm still 0-53.
Oh, hello, don't make me.
That's a perfect record.
Okay.
A non-streak.
I'm giving you the shut up, Mike face.
Yeah, what was
never
that?
Mind. And The Long Run, he wrote about getting sober by ultra marathoning, running like 50 miles till his toenails fell off. Are you lonesome tonight?
See, which is odd because normally you're the kind of guy I would hate. A guy who gets sober and then runs marathons and makes
ultra marathons. I thought it would be 26 miles.
I know. Make the rest of us really look bad.
Yeah. Anyway, he's also a musician.
a renaissance man.
He's a record out called How to Make a Bad Situation Worse. He's in my friend Zach's band, Fresh Kills. Their record, Raise Up the Sheets.
Former guest of the Mike and Judy Show.
Former guest.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
You got
thank
it.
You for being here, you
both,
guys.
We're both renaissance men who write and perform and
right.
are out there
Mike
shaking
is part
it
of Unitard. He's a dazzle dancer.
I am.
So,
I am.
Well, let's start off with the Kindle Singles, because I think this is a great format, and I was really happy when someone figured it out. As a writer myself, I get caught between a rock and a hard place sometimes. Something is too long to be a magazine story, and of course, the magazine market is kind of moribund at this market, especially for long-form stories, whether fiction or nonfiction. Try to sell some fiction to a magazine. Forget about it. And the Kindle is perfect.
Mike, was what yours one of the first ones?
No, I don't think it was one of the first, but definitely when I submitted mine, or when I was talking to David Blum, who's the editor in chief,
who is not allowed to be here with us today.
Oh, he isn't, because he's
they keep him under lock.
They do.
Key.
They do. Yeah, he's such a nice guy. But they were kind of, he was interesting to talk to, because he was just sort of like, we're discovering that these Kindle singles are somewhere, and I can't remember the word count, but it was something like somewhere between 16,000 and 40,000 words. There's some like number of words that they were deciding was like the kind of sweet spot for these Kindle singles, and so this and what I was going to tell in the Kindle single just sort of fit that right slot
between 16 and 40,000 words.
I know, something like
that's
that.
Some leeway for you.
Totally. But it's weird, because it's not a magazine article like you said, Mike, and it's not a novel. It's like it's this weird in between zone, and I think that the thing that makes me so happy about it is that I feel like for a long time we've been in this sort of bifurcated, bipolar world where it's just like it has to be a novel or it has to be a magazine article. And
right.
And now things are cracking through and things are at different lengths like they were back in the, you know,
back when magazines published long
stories. Reading
story.
Was actually a fad. I mean, there were times like, you know, that reading was a fad in the 1950s when everyone read pulp magazines, mm-hmm. and so many people were writing fiction and short fiction detective stories, right. you know, genre stuff.
Yeah.
But people read digests in pulp magazines.
And then you go back to like Ben Franklin and the invention of the printing press when pamphlets were being made. I mean,
that's one of the things that's really interesting to me about like how traditional publishers are just sort of like crying murder about, you know, about the Kindle and about e-readers in general. But really what Kindle has done, I mean, at least for me and for Mike, is give us an outlet to publish something that otherwise would have just, you know, would never have seen the light of day. And the other thing is that, like, for kids, reading's kind of sexy now, because you have like a fancy device to do it on, and people are, I think that people are reading a lot more in the same
I
way
don't
that
know
like
about that they're reading shorter things more.
The sad thing is, and Mike was mentioning this before, that the Kindle singles, which may have started as sort of a literary outpost, is now being taken over by genre writers. And you're seeing your James Patterson's writing, you know, short form stuff, and that's been what's been popular on Kindle. It's self help stuff, Bibles, and genre stuff. That's the biggest Kindle sellers.
Totally.
Well, I would disagree with what Judy said. I do think, because I see them everywhere. I mean, and it's, I mean, I would compare it to the, you know, the transition we saw in the music industry of when, you know, when iPods and iTunes showed up, and now there's like so much music out there, and people always have their headphones on.
But books aren't selling very much. Not many copies. I mean, some are, but
I agree. But I think, I mean, one of the things that I think we're seeing a lot of is, you know, with stuff that's like Kindle single length, that the people have the attention span for that. I don't think books were selling, you know, before a Kindle either.
Oh no, I'm not saying that Kindle put them out of business. I don't think that at all. I think
we saw
format,
people are like reading you know magazine articles and blog posts, you know, and just.
But most blog posts are like a few hundred.
Well, I think there's a confluence of a number of things, not least of all the internet. I know it's obviously been said before, but people's attention span is shorter and shorter and shorter. Everything is being dumbed down. I mean, TV is so fucking stupid, and as a almost reality star show yourself, you know better than anyone.
Wait, he might be a reality star. The show got canceled, though.
Yeah, it got...
Well, he didn't sign that, like, you know, indentured servitude contract.
You're giving away the...
Well, yeah, I think
the
that's
cliffhanger
in the
ending. Well, yeah, the show was called Three. It was on CBS for a grand total of 2 episodes before they canned.
They didn't even give it the dignity of going to 3 episodes.
I know, which is really funny. But I mean, it's good, because it means that there won't be like guys in black suits like knocking on my door and then like taking me away to some corporate, you know, corporate law gulag.
My favorite part of the whole bit is when they give you the 33-page contract, which says they basically own you, your likeness, everything you've ever done for in perpetuity, and you must appear anywhere they ask you to, you know,
for no money,
you know, for the rest of your life,
yeah.
for a very nominal amount of money, and then the motherfucker actually has to say to you, like, look, it's from CBS, trust them.
Yeah, that just blew my mind. You know,
yeah,
it's
Edward
like,
Morrow's,
you know,
like rolling over in his grave right now.
Yeah, it's like, you know, trust BP. You
know? Yeah, it's like, right. I can't believe there's still people out there that still fall for the reality show thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's like, still enough bachelors.
You know how you say fuck you in show business? Trust me.
They're out there, and there are people who can...
Well, they're the same people who go on like talk shows and talk about their father raping them. Like, right. You know what? Some things should be between you, your therapist, and law enforcement. It's just when, people want to be famous.
Right. When I told them no, they were like, they could not believe it. It was
what?
Like they
yeah.
had like what? Just nobody like says such no. hurt what? Feelings. Like I've had like lengthy relationships end with less fanfare. You know, I was getting like late night texts from them.
I can't believe you broke up with CBS. Like it was such a cast.
He's just it was playing over hard
for
to get.
A long time.
He's holding out to be like one of the Bachelors in Three, the male series.
It is astonishing that what people will do for attention and to be on these shows.
I mean, that was the thing too, is that it, you know, it paid. I've had temp gigs. I don't think I've had a temp gig that paid as bad as the reality gig paid. You know, and they want you 24 hours. You have to agree to be filmed naked. You know, you have to.
I consider that
but
a plus.
But at the same time, you couldn't show your tattoos. So
exactly,
like you just tattoo your wiener and then you never get filmed. You
which
know?
Reminds me
that
of an
is
old
a great
joke.
Idea.
The punchline is welcome to Jamaica. Have a nice day.
Mike, have you ever considered reality TV show, being a performer, show people and all?
I have not. I've worked on a couple of reality shows. I worked on this, which I should write about it. But there was right after 9/11, when we were all just like, what's the world? What's happening? I got a gig as I was desperate for money. Working for a show about party crashers, where people walk into parties and crash them, and it was sort of tested the edge of reality shows because the sound was bad, the lighting was bad, the release forms were a nightmare.
Yeah,
and then I was a writer for it, which is just impossible because there's no writing. So I was just it was like this totally like Kafka-esque job where I just sat there like not writing but. Getting money. And
it is a bizarre thing out there. You know,
that's nice.
Sounds like a sweet gig, man.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, you know,
you didn't have to be on TV.
I think Andy Warhol was optimistic when he said that everyone would be famous for 15 minutes because what he didn't realize is that we'd all be famous for the same 15 minutes. And it wouldn't matter.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is like internet fame is sort of, you know, you get all this attention, but it really means nothing. It's like waking up with like big breasts one day.
Actually, I love
it. It's like everybody stares at you and it's like, but that's it.
What you say in the Kindle Signal, I love it. You say, you know, the internet is great until you're on TV. And then you realize, now TV is huge, man. Hitting a million people at a pop, that's a low-rated TV show. That's low-rated cable, a million at a pop. What does The Bachelor reach every week?
I have no idea.
I mean, it's fucking unbelievable.
It doesn't reach me.
CBS was, they were saying almost 12 million nightly viewers.
Yeah. I have enough trouble going to the store, passing like enough people that I know, having to stay high. If a million people were stopping me to say hello every day, I can understand why Lindsay gets so upset.
Well, the other thing is like you live in Brooklyn for 14 years and you sort of get to know everybody.
But the internet is like a village.
At Freshkill shows, you look out into the crowd and it's like...
Slept with her.
I was going to say, she seems like a nice person. She seems like a nice person. She seems like she has interesting ideas.
You're changing my opinion about musicians.
I remember when I had two Facebook friends and I had slept with 50% of them. So, speaking of Renaissance men, though, I think Misha's going to play a song for us while we get some pizza.
What song are we going to hear?
Oh, all these songs are songs I wrote before I quit drinking. That's my caveat. So, Mike, you may actually like
this. Well, right, here we
this,
go.
This one's called Your Plus One at My Funeral.
That sounds cheery.
Right on. Here we are with Misha Shalubi on the Mike and Judy Show, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network.
I got destroyed last night and fell asleep watching the last picture show. You were playing every role. I woke up today and wrote another obituary waltz that you're never gonna hear. And then I stared into your picture until I disappeared. I know you'll be looking so beautiful in a long black dress at my funeral, but Who's gonna be your plus one? Have you crying on his arm when I'm lying there so cold? Who's gonna walk you home when I'm rotting down below? Who's gonna walk you home when I'm rotting down below? Well, it's not so bad, this windowless life. I have my good days. I reach about as high as lonesome and as low as the black plague. I've seen the underwater garden. Let me tell you, man, I am not afraid to die. As much as I'm afraid to feel like dying every day for the rest of my life, I know you'll be looking so beautiful in a long black dress at my funeral. But who's gonna be your plus one? Have you crying on his arm when I'm lying there so cold? Who's gonna walk you home when I'm rotting down below? Who's gonna walk you home when I'm rotting down below?
All right.
Well, I'm glad you quit drinking. Thank you, Joe.
That'll perk up your Sunday.
That's good. It's the Mike and Judy show.
But broadcast, hey, he quit drinking. He's not on the verge of death. He's in better shape than anyone I know.
I know, making the rest of us look bad again. So
getting bored with running 50 miles, so he takes up kickboxing.
So what do you think about this South African cat, the Olympics, with the prosthetic bouncy feet?
I haven't watched any of the Olympics at all.
Oh my God, men's water polo.
I think sports.
Men's swimming.
I think really? Sports are kind of dumb.
Seriously?
Yeah, well, I hate sports.
Whatever.
Well, not only do you hate sports, apparently you hate professional wrestling too.
And you hate America. You are anti-American.
Wait, I can explain. No, I can't really.
What I do want to ask you about is, we were talking before about the model of the Kindle singles, to get back to where we started, viz. What happened to the music industry when everything went digital. But you guys are both performers too, and most writers aren't. And, you know, I face that same challenge, and Judy does too, to a certain degree, is we try to get our message out and try to do live appearances and try to bring the message to the people as sort of some way to get around and differentiate ourselves from this whole other mess. I think that's what's left with the music industry. They realized they got to get out there and do it. You just can't, you know, depend on selling books without real access and real contact with the people. You guys finding it easy enough to put those two things together? Because I still think there's a disconnect between, you know, in terms of the general public, of writers who are also performers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people ask me that, you know, they say like, well, are you a writer or are you a musician, right, or what are you? And it's like, you can only have one epithet.
I'm,
you know,
awesome. You're
Bob
answer.
The Builder, or you're, you know, like, you know, Dick the Butcher or whatever. But I mean, I do everything everything and anything I can not to have to hold an honest job.
Well, there's always this weird thing that, like, if you wanted to be an artist, you'd have to stop. If you were a musician and you wanted to be a painter, take Don Van Vliet as one example I think of. They told him, stop making records for 8 years because no one will take you seriously if you're doing two art forms. And it worked for him. And I think, you know, David Bowie, they basically said, if you really want to be an actor, quit making records.
But Mike did some great videos to go along with your book, The Underminer.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, purely on a creative level, like, performance and writing have always been completely intertwined for me. My first novel was based on stories that I've been doing a lot of storytelling, and I kind of and then The Underminer is based on a character that I had performed live, and then I turned it into a book. And The Junket, I had been, you know, all that shit happened to me, and then I was writing it down, and it looked like a crazy person had written it. And then I got invited by the Movement Research Performance Festival to do a 30-minute slot. So then I honed it down to the story and told the story. And there's something great about being on stage because it really edits you down. It gets rid of all those false words.
Yeah, you can tell when people don't laugh.
Yeah, like, yeah. It moves along. You're moving along at a pace. And so I took that 30 minutes and then I expanded it a little bit more and put some more detail in it. So the performance side of things is always part of, and I think maybe before, I don't know, 1930 or something, people were telling stories. I don't know why I chose that decade, but people, there's always
you're
been
a historian
well,
too. Yeah,
well, exactly. Before 1930, there was no internet,
right? Yeah.
But imagine a time without recorded sound. You know, right. When you wanted to hear music, you had a piano in your house and you had to make it yourself, right. And you'd go out and you'd buy sheet music, and that's how you bought music. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a crazy thing. I mean, I talked more recently just about going out and buying a record. You know, and especially a difficult to find record. If you lived in suburbia and you wanted to find, you know, a record by some old Black Cat or some weird punk rock record, you know, you had to make a real fucking effort to get it. And when you brought it home, it was like bringing silk to the Orient.
Showing our age, Mike.
How many years of experience do we have between us, Judy? Nearly a century, my friend.
This made me want to vomit.
I think what Mike is saying is, you know, is on point, though. I mean, you know, that when you're, you know, when you're trying to bring a story to life in front of a live crowd, that's really where you can tell the shit from the food, mm-hmm. you know. And it's you know, I mean, if you're telling an anecdote to somebody, you're like, oh man, I walked to the store and they were out of Diet Coke. You know, but if you're writing it down, it's like some, you know, some.
Hey,
you
it's
know,
easy 50. To be funny at the bar.
I would understand that horror.
You know, but I have that. When you're left to your own devices, you like, you know, you get all fancy, and it's 15,000 words. But you know, when you're, you know, by the time you get to the store, but and you haven't even started looking for the Diet Coke. Right. But when you're, you know, when you're telling a story, especially when people are like looking at their watches and shit like that, like
yeah,
you know,
that's bad.
Ready to get out of there.
Well, that's a good thing about, you know, performing the stuff is you get to workshop it, and you realize what jokes work and which jokes don't. And hopefully by the time you get back to New York, you know, you test it out on the road.
Right.
You get back to New York, you know which jokes are working, which jokes are not.
I have to say there probably is a detriment. Like, I think people don't think you're serious or something. Like, Jonathan Franzen, if he suddenly was just like, hey, I'm going to test out my material live, like, people would be like, oh, his books aren't as serious as I thought they were. Like, there is definitely, like, a risk you're taking.
Well, I get it all the time. Yeah. When my first book came out on Pharaoh Stress Giroux, and I was touring it with a band behind me or a bongo player, and every gig was like a beatnik happening, and I was telling stories, and people came and they liked it, but the people at the publisher were like, why do you have to do that?
Right.
Why can't you just read from a podium like everybody else?
Which goes back to this publishing industry and how fucked it is. It's like so stupid about marketing and seriously, I've never, it's like they wear caveman outfits to work.
I think the solution is to keep doing exactly what we're doing.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, you don't expect your friends to be like one flat, you know, like 2D thing, you know, like this is the jokey guy, you know, and right. This is the serious guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was like, we're all like round people, you know, and I think that, you know, that
some
eventually,
of us more than others.
Maybe another 25 years from now, the stuff shirts and publishing will figure out that this is a good thing and not a bad thing.
Well, I think they're starting to come around. Yeah. I mean, because they have no choice.
Yeah.
But big publishing has always been behind. When my first book came out, I was all over the digital format. I thought ebooks were great, and I still do. If people are reading the stuff, it's great. I don't really care if it's on paper or not. If my message is getting to people, I think it's a positive thing. I'm not in the business of selling paper. You know, I've piles of books in my house. I adore them. But if you're reading my words and you're laughing with me, I win.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And there are certain books, though, that I prefer to have in paper.
Sure,
like, I bought the Wonarovich book, the Cynthia Carr book, which is fucking amazing. It's 600 pages. I bought it a big hard copy because I wanted it. I'm reading How to Be a Woman by Caitlin Moran, which is hilarious, but I bought that on my Kindle.
This is the thing, though, is that I really think that that ebooks and e-readers are going to do for hardbacks what MP3s have done for vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, vinyl is like doing better than it was 10 years ago because now the CDs are dying, you know, and CDs have gone the way that paperbacks will go, where if you want to buy something that's disposable, you'll just buy it for your e-reader. Mm-hmm. And then if you want something that you want to have, like Led Zeppelin 5, then you'll buy the
vinyl is still a niche, though. I mean, that's for people who are really serious and serious collectors. It's
but no
Britney Spears fan is going to buy her record on vinyl. It's for those of us who like classic rock.
I don't know. There's some queens out there who I know who will totally buy that. But it's funny because now I do have this fantasy. It's like Project Number 45 to go back and print out my Kindle single and make it a nice little tiny little book that I put in independent bookstores.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Yeah. I think it should exist in both formats, and I believe you're allowed to do that, right? The Kindle single, you still own the
David, and he's like, I'll get back to you on that, and then I'm like, he's not getting back to me, so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to fuck it and do it, and then they can like yell at me.
I mean, I'm no lawyer, obviously, but I think you can do that, and I think that that's one thing that, you know, that's really cool about it is that it's the opposite of the agreement that CBS gave me that, you know, with Amazon, they're just acting as a middleman selling your stuff.
I love the cut.
They don't own you.
Well, it's good.
That's great.
Well, that's amazing.
Well, that's the wonderful really thing. And people have said, especially if you have a name, hey, you don't even need a publisher anymore. I mean, really, what's the useless middleman? A good American tradition. But if you have a platform like being on television, or, you know, if you do have like, you know, 50,000 Twitter followers, sure, you could sell it directly, you know, to your crowd and get all the money yourself.
Well, this is the thing, though. I mean, is like when I went into Amazon, nobody knew who I was. I mean, I was just sort of like an anonymous druggie. And Dave was like, oh, this is going to be a great idea. You know, people are going to read this. And I was like, Dave, you're full of shit. But you've come through for me a bunch of times in the past, so I'm going to take a chance on you. And he was totally right, but it wasn't something great that I brought to it. It was the platform. And, you know, and Amazon definitely, you know, in my mind, they earned the money that, you know, they definitely earned their percentage by...
They promote the hell,
you
know, out of
they them. Do. Yeah, there's, exactly. There's this really interesting contract that you see of what they do internally on Amazon, like how they highlight your name and you know, recommended reading, and they'll add you to these different lists. And then there's this one hilarious thing. It's just like the Sparkle Stars program or something, and it's got this hilarious name, and I was like, what the fuck is the Sparkle Star program? And I guess something comes up in the corner of the screen that shimmers or something, and then you
as a dazzle dancer, you must appreciate
I know it's
that.
Just like the word sparkle. I was like, oh my god, yay sparkle. But yeah, they do, internally, they do a lot of wonderful stuff.
But speaking to the democracy, the so-called democracy of the internet, isn't it a little scary when Amazon, who's got such a big player, is becoming a publisher? I mean, they're a bookseller.
And now
they're a publisher. Mm-hmm. When Barnes & Noble becomes a publisher, and they own stores. They own
Barnes
the last
Noble's
big...
Barnes & Noble's also a publisher.
They are. And they're the last, you know, really big store. And they're really good at selling books, Barnes & Noble. And for all their giant stock in their superstores, still, there's a lot of books that don't get in there. A lot of books that don't get in there. By the way, I saw your book in Barnes & Noble on a table out in front.
It was on a table out front?
It was on a table out front. I was so proud.
I have to go take pictures.
I cavelled.
Oh, my God.
And that's Judy McGuire's book, The Official Book of Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Lists.
Out now. Available everywhere.
Is it available for the Kindle?
No.
No?
That's why you don't like it.
I think if I tried to download your book, my Kindle would explode.
Yeah, it was too filthy for Hal Leonard. It's too filthy for the Kindle. No, I think I have to talk to my publisher on Monday, but yeah, I think it's going to come out on Kindle soon.
Like I said, I think the Kindle's a great thing, and I think there's a lot of room to experiment with enhanced books and bells and whistles. And, you know, like I was saying, when my book came out, it was going to be on the Kindle, and I make videos and performance videos, and I'm a songwriter and play all shit. I said, let me just throw it all there and give it away for free, because it's promotion, and to get people to my gigs, which, you know, is a big turn on, as you guys know, to actually be in front of people with your stuff. And they're like, no, we can't do that for you, because if we do it for you, Tom Wolfe will want it too, because that's when they stopped being FSG and they started to be Macmillan, and the whole corporation started coming down.
Well, I mean, I really think that we're going to see that, you know, what happened in the music industry happen in the publishing industry, where I'm going to predict years from now that we're going to have like indie publishing labels. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
You know, where it could, because to be a publisher now is nothing. I mean, you send an order to a printer and like pay for the books.
Well, the problem is writing a book is a real pain in the ass, as you know. Well, it's like having homework for a year, but making a record is relatively easy. That's why books still have gravitas. Well, to make a great record, maybe not, but you know how many records are being put out right now, and kids are making them in their kitchens, and some of them sound really good, actually, and they push a button.
Yeah, but people are writing novels on their phones, and like, you know, there's a huge thing in Japan of like these 14-year-old girls who are writing romance novels like through text messages and stuff like that.
Okay, 14-year-old girls writing romance novels is not going to break some giant literary bubble. We know
50
that.
50 Shades of Grey?
Fan Come fiction. On. I know. Well, that's crazy. I know. That's a phenomenal. It's a lightning in a bottle, and not probably a good business model to follow.
Well, thank you so much for being here, you guys. Mike Albo, where can we find you on the internet?
MikeAlbo.com, I guess.
But also,
my Twitter feed is Albo Mike.
Thank you, Mishko. Mm-hmm.
I'm at MikeAlbo.com as well.
You guys are shacking up.
MishkaShabali.com and Mishka Shabali on Twitter.
Do you have any shows coming up?
Hell no.
Not even a Fresh Kills show?
Fresh Kills is playing. That other band. Oh, yeah, those guys. Yes, we're playing on Wednesday, August 15th at Public Assembly with Violent Bullshit.
Oh, I love them.
Well, if it's good enough for Mike and Judy, it should be good enough for everybody.
And we're going to go out with a song from Mishka. What are we going to hear now?
This is another drinking song, because that's the only kind of song that I have.
Can you play like 99 bottles of beer on the wall?
Any songs since you've sobered up?
I have not written a single song since I've stopped drinking.
Okay, and let that be a lesson to everyone out there in Radio Land. So, for Judy McGuire and our fantastically, awesomely talented guest, it's Mike Edison. Thanks to Joe, our great engineer, here on the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting from Berta's. Mishka, lay it on us. What are we going to hear?
This one's called Taxes in Jail.
See you guys next week.
Turns off the light in the bedroom to make it easier to pretend I'm somebody new. Baby, I don't blame you for pretending. Well, I'm pretending I'm someone else too. So let's raise a glass to disappointment. Let's raise a glass to regret. Oh, what the hell? Let's raise a glass to pretending that we never met. You won't hear from me that you're beautiful, 'cause it's your insecurity that keeps you around. But baby, you know you can always count on me when you need someone to let you down. So let's raise a glass to disappointment. Let's raise a glass to betrayal. Oh, what the hell? Let's raise a glass. Let's raise a glass to everything failed. Played nurse to my wounded soldier, and damn it, that skirt fits you well. But you were such a sweet kid, stuck with an invalid. Surprised you lasted as long as you did. So let's raise a glass to failed ventures. Let's raise a glass to plans gone awry. My love was as big as the Titanic. Is that an iceberg between your thighs? So let's raise a glass to cheap shots. Let's raise a glass to betrayal. God damn it all to hell. Let's raise a glass. Let's raise a glass to everything failed. Yeah, let's drink to taxes and jail.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.